Christian greetings to each one. I have appreciated the service thus far. I do want to welcome each one to this part of the service. Appreciate the prayers that have been offered in my behalf. Well, another tractor. Seat keeps dumping. I'm not quite sure why, but sorry, girls. I like babies, but I'm not into doll babies. So bear with me. I think this might be the last of the tractor messages. But I had to think maybe some ladies do enjoy tractors after all, because I noticed that Sister Sarah has one in her front yard. So so this here is a Super A Farmall. Super C, okay. Yes, the A was the smallest of the lettered Farmalls. There was a A, B, C, H, and M, and I'm not sure if there were some others possibly, but those are the ones I know about. Super A had a touch control hydraulic system, and that was an improvement over the earlier model, which was just the A. So this is a Super A, and it was made from 1947 to 1954. They had 18 belt horsepower. See, it has a pulley in the back here. This piece right here is a pulley for a flat belt. You could run different equipment with it. Maybe a buck saw to cut firewood. We had one of those at home. And we also had a hammer mill that was powered by a flat belt and a tractor pulley. So different equipment you could run with that. So it had 18 horsepower for the belt and 16, I believe, on the drawbar. It was considered a one-row tractor. You can see it's offset. So you sat over here to the side. The motor and drivetrain was to the side. You sat there and the row went underneath here, and you could see right there. They had planters and cultivators that mounted front there. So it was a one-row tractor. It was a one plow, one mow board, one 16-inch mow board was what it would pull. In 1954, the material that I have in 1954, it could be bought for $1,400. My grandpa had one. He also had an H. Our neighbor also had an A. I'm not sure if it was a Super A or just an A, but he baled hay for us. He got that mark, custom hay baling with an A. Well, the baler had its own motor, so that helped a little, but it wasn't a fast operation. But anyhow, my grandpa had a Super A. He also had an H. And when my father started, the first year he started farming, he didn't have equipment. So my grandpa brought his H up and broke the land. And then my dad used the Super A to harrow, plant, and cultivate that first crop. It wasn't a big farm. Don't know how many acres they would have tilled that first year, but I'm guessing maybe 30. So that was still pretty significant to do all that farming with just 18 horsepower, because now we use that much horsepower just to cut the grass in front of the house. They were a very popular tractor. I think they built over 105,000 of them. They were very useful. So maybe as we move on, I don't really have a title for the message. Maybe you can think of one. But I'm thinking along this line. It's not about farm all tractors, the message, but maybe work for all. Though we be small, there's still something for all of us to do. Zechariah 4:10, beginning of the verse, says, "The poverty, weakness," excuse me, I'm starting to read the comments. Zechariah 4:10 says, "For who hath despised the day of the small things? For they will rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel." The poverty, weakness, and unbefriended state of the Jews. It was said, What do these feeble Jews? Will they build? Though their instruments be weak and unlikely, yet God often chooses such to bring about great things by them. So let's look at Judges 6 first. Judges 6, I think we'll start reading at verse 7. "And it came to pass, when the children of Israel cried unto the Lord because of the Midianites, that the Lord sent a prophet unto the children of Israel, which said unto them, Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt, and brought you forth out of the house of bondage. And I delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of all that oppressed you, and drave them out from before you, and gave you their land. And I said unto you, I am the Lord your God. Fear not the gods of the Amorites, in whose land ye dwell. But ye have not obeyed my voice. And there came an angel of the Lord, and sat under an oak which was in Ophrah, that pertained unto Joash the Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, The Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our fathers told us of, saying, Did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. And the Lord looked upon him and said, Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. And the Lord said unto him, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. We see the Israelites were in dire straits. They were being robbed, plundered, and oppressed at the hands of the heathen. Here we see Gideon confessed that he was a small man. His family was poor. There was not a lot of resources at his disposal. He was threshing grain in secret so the enemy wouldn't come and take it. So even though in his own estimation, he didn't have a lot to offer, but we see that he was doing something. He was thrashing. It was probably a pretty pathetic operation compared to the scale that they were accustomed to, but he was doing it. He was doing what he had to do so there would be food to eat. It would be kind of fun to toy around there with a Super A tractor to do a little gardening maybe, but to farm with it, we could hardly imagine. I think maybe Ryan sort of gets tired of working land even with the cab and air ride seat. So if we had to go use something like that all day, it would really get tiresome. But anyhow, here was Gideon thrashing by the wine press instead of the threshing floor. So let's not give up. Maybe that's why the angel of the Lord greeted him by the title, Thou thou mighty man of valor. The Lord looked on him and said, go, I am sending you. When we are little in our own sight, God can use us. When God looks on us and says, I'm sending you, then we need to go and apply ourselves to the task that he gives us to do. Why didn't God use a bigger person, one with a commanding presence, one with military training, one whose family had financial resources? Sometimes God uses big people and they do well, but many times big people get in God's way. In this particular situation, if we were to continue reading, we would see that God's plan was not to use a big army. He was not planning to use a normal military campaign. Judges 7:2, and the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. God was going to use a very small army. In fact, it was only 300 people, 300 men. And they didn't use heavy artillery. They didn't use sophisticated missiles. But they used trumpets, pitchers, and lamps. Not really heavyweight stuff. How could that work? Back to verse 16. The Lord said, surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. Surely I will be with thee. God uses people that their only ambition is to obey God and do his will. Judges 13, we have the beginning of another story, the beginning story of Samson. Now we know that Samson, as we know the story, Samson was not a farm OA, not even a super A. He was probably more comparable to a super M. God had plans for him. Judges 13:5 says, for lo, thou shalt conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come on his head. For the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb, and he shall begin to deliver Israel out of the hand of the Philistines. We know from studying this account that God did use him to judge the Philistines, but we have to wonder what would have been done if Samson would have been totally committed to God. He was very strong physically, and he did judge Israel for 20 years. Apparently, he had leadership capabilities, but alas, it seems like his carnal desires he was not able to control. Seems like he was his own man, did what he wanted to do, expected to get what he whatever he desired. Judges 16:20 says, and she said, the Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he woke up out of his sleep and said, I will go out as at other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. This was a very sad day. Samson had been used to getting what he wanted, doing what he wanted to do. He expected to do the same here, but he was not able to. It doesn't matter how big we are. It doesn't matter how strong we are. It doesn't matter that we had the best in Christian heritage. Samson's parents were very godly people. They were wanting to do everything right for Samson. Verse 8, chapter 13, then Manoah entreated the Lord and said, O my Lord, let the man of God which thou didst send come again unto us, and teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born. And then it says much the same thing in verse 12. And Manoah said, Now let the words come to pass. How shall we order the child, and how shall we do unto him? We can't fault Manoah or his wife on the way they trained Samson. I believe they had a desire to train him up in the way that he should go. So it doesn't matter if we had a good heritage. That's important. It does matter, but what I'm saying is it doesn't matter in the end if we are not faithful. It doesn't matter if we have a lot of past victories or accomplishments. It doesn't even matter that I've been ordained 21 years. Samson was a judge for 20. None of that matters if the Spirit of God has departed from me. I'm good for nothing but to grind for the enemy and to die with them. I think we need to sit up and take notice. Why did God leave Samson? Why does he leave men today? 1 Samuel 15, a few verses. And now we're jumping ahead to Saul's experience. Then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And he said unto him, Say on. Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey, and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? God uses lightweights. He uses little people. He also uses heavyweights, big people. But he can only use men that are little in their own sight. When we start to think that we can do it the way we want to do it, we can do it when we want to do it, beware. We are no longer little in our sight, our own sight, and we are on the threshold of doing evil if we have not already done it. Saul's life is a sad story because it started out so well. 1 Samuel 9, a few verses 20 and 21, it's where Saul was looking for his father's asses. And as for thine ass, and then he went up, remember he went up to they were going to go up to talk to the seer to see if he knew where they were. And we'll just break in the story at verse 20. And as for thine asses that were lost 3 days ago, set not thy mind on them, for they are found. And on whom is all the desire of Israel? Is it not on thee and on all thy father's house? And Saul answered and said, Am not I a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel? And my family, the least of the families of the tribe of Benjamin? Wherefore then speakest thou so to me? Saul didn't campaign for the position of king. He was appointed king by God and anointed. But as Samson, who was set up to do great things for God's people, he failed miserably. So let's look now at David. David was a small person, maybe. He was a young person. In my opinion, he started out as a lightweight, just a young man, a shepherd. He wasn't a prominent man in society. He wasn't an elder that sat in the city gate, as his great-grandfather did, but was out in the field. He was out in the field when important things were happening at home. So let's look at 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel 16, starting at verse 1. The Lord said unto Samuel, How long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil, and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. And Samuel said, How can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, Take an heifer with thee, and say, I am come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name unto thee. And Samuel did that which the Lord spake, and came to Bethlehem. And the elders of the town trembled at his coming, and said, Comest thou peaceably? And he said, Peaceably, I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Maybe a few comments there, 1 through 4, just talking about a big person. Samuel must have been a big person because we see the elders trembled at his coming. So let's keep reading. Verse 5, And he said, Peaceably I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, Surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said unto Samuel, Look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, Neither hath the Lord chosen him, or chosen this. Then Jesse made Shammah to pass by, and he said, Neither hath the Lord chosen this. Again Jesse made 7 of his sons to pass before Samuel. Samuel said unto Jesse, The Lord hath not chosen these. Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. Samuel said unto Jesse, Send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, Arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brethren. And the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Little person, big person, young person, old person. How does the Lord choose? How does God choose those that he wants to do his work? He looks on the heart. He doesn't look at the outward appearance. He looks on the heart. So we as men cannot look at one's heart. But I don't think we are left in the dark. According to the scriptures, Luke 6:45, A man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. So moving on, let's look at 1 Samuel 17. This is a story that we like, and we often refer to it. This morning, I think maybe we might read the whole story. We want to look at several things in it, and I think maybe we'll just read the whole story. So if young people, children, all of us, if you want to follow along, that would be great, so your minds don't begin to wander as we read through this story. I think I'll start reading at verse 2. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and his span. And he had an helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am I not a Philistine, and your servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then will we be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel. This day give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of the Ephraimite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistines drew near morning and evening, and presented himself 40 days. Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn, these 10 loaves, and run to the camp to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how they thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with the keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him. And it came to the trench, as the host was going forth to battle, to the fight, and shot for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage and the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that is come up, surely to defy Israel? Is he come up? And it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab his eldest brother heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither? And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and thy naughtiness of thine heart, for thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with the Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep. There came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. And David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor, and he put on an helmet of brass upon his head, and also he armed him with a coat of mail. David girded his sword upon his armor, and he assayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said unto Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off, and he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had, even in a scrip, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on, and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air, and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield, but I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee, and take thine head from thee, and I will give thee the carcass of the host, carcasses of the host of the Philistine this day, unto the fowls of the air, and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose, and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted, and ran toward the enemy to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag, took thence his stone, and slang it, smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with his sling, with a stone, and smote the Philistine, and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine, and took his sword, and drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. I think I'll stop reading there. Verse 2, Goliath was definitely a heavyweight, but he was on the wrong side to start with. But what about Saul? Verse 11. Saul and all Israel were dismayed. They were greatly afraid. Where were the big men? Where were the courageous? Where were the Joshes, Calebs, and the Gideons? Where was David? He was at home taking care of the sheep. He was not part of the army. He was not involved in the conflict at this time. It was only the 3 oldest brothers that were involved. So while, again, there were exciting things going on, David was not, as his older brother accused him, curious to see what was going on, and leaving his responsibilities at home and sneaking off down to see the battle. No, he was not down there yet. He was at home taking care of the sheep. I believe that he was faithfully working as a shepherd, even though there was more exciting things going on. God can use people who are willing to work at mundane tasks in out-of-the-way places. Joseph down there in Egypt working in the prison as a prisoner. Moses, stepson of the princes of Egypt, taking care of sheep year after year in the backside of the wilderness. Don't think he had email or WhatsApp. He was just back there, faithfully working. Faithful in small things. Isn't that how God tests us? Tests us to see if we're capable of handling something besides the sheep. As David's story unfolds, we see he was up to the challenge of shepherding. When the predators came to take the sheep, he dispensed it with them. He got rid of them, got the sheep back, got the lamb back. When difficulties arise, do we have a faith that will sustain us? In our day-to-day activities, do we have our feet on the ground? Can we relate to the here and now problems? Or do we wish we were elsewhere in the kingdom work? Maybe we wish we were on a big CAM project, maybe in Puerto Rico, helping to rebuild. Maybe at a clinic in Mexico, someplace exciting, instead of just laboring away here in the Buckeye. Well, David was faithful. Notice when his father asked him to do something, he was ready to do it. He was at the beck and call of his father, wasn't he? And to be useful, we need to be ready to go when the father asks us to go. We need to be ready to stay when he doesn't ask us to go. So as we could say, we should be at the beck and call of our Father in heaven. We see David as a responsible person. He left the sheep with the keeper. He didn't just up and leave. He left them with the keeper. So a caution to us might be that we should not jump from one field of service to the next without an orderly discharge of our responsibilities. Well, we see David went. He met his brothers and he saw firsthand the problem they were facing. Goliath was terrifying them. The whole army seemed like nearly petrified at the challenge that Goliath was giving. Verse 26, we see David's heart for God. He was concerned that here was somebody that was defying the armies of the living God. Seems to me we're living in a day and time and place where it's getting to be more common for men to publicly defy God and his word. Can we, like David, take a stand? Or would we rather, like the rest of the Israelite army, flee? We see when David's brother got on him, when he was accused of ulterior motives, he said, "Is there not a cause?" Yes, there was a cause. But when people take a stand for the truth, when they are willing to defend the truth, they are often misunderstood. And oftentimes they're misunderstood by their own people, as well as opposed by the enemy. Verse 32, David says, "Let no man's heart fail." God needs people to encourage the brethren when things are looking rather hopeless. This situation had been going on for 40 days. Let no man's heart fail. These were not empty words. David said, "I will go and fight this Philistine." God needs people that are ready to move with action. Maybe you could take this for an assignment, whether you are an A or an H or an M. Do you see people discouraged? How can you encourage them not to fear, not to give up? Well, moving on, verse 33, Saul pointed out that David was just a youth. He was ruddy. I think this tractor here might be sort of ruddy. I think ruddy means sort of red countenance. But anyhow, he was just a youth. His opponent was a man of war, a seasoned warrior. But though David might not have been seasoned warrior, he did have experience meeting difficult foes, the lion and the bear. He had experienced God working in his behalf, and he was depending on God. God has a lot of work for people like that. We see he didn't delay. Well, he did get delayed momentarily when Saul suited him up in his armor. But fortunately, David realized before it was too late that that wasn't going to work. In our time, we have Satan and his forces opposing us, I believe. And then we have nominal Christianity that has methods and psychology and theology that they promote. And we need to beware. They have not been proven. They might sound, some of their things might sound good and logical, but they have not been proven as God's way. We need to have faith. We need to have faith in God like David. We need to run to meet the enemy with. We see that he ran to meet the enemy with only his staff, sling, and 5 stones. Those were only tangible weapons that he had. Notice the situation was even more taunting. Goliath not only came himself, but he had an armor bearer. It would have made the Super A look even smaller, wouldn't it? This big man, this giant, and plus an armor bearer. Moving down to verse 40, we see David did not go unprepared. He didn't want Saul's armor. He hadn't proved it. He didn't ask for reinforcements. He didn't ask for someone to back him up. When facing hard things, we like to have some backup, maybe some heavyweights. Not David. He stopped at the creek and he selected 5 smooth stones. Why 5? What could they represent? I don't think we'll take time to go into all that. But we could say for ourselves, I like to think that the 5 stones are the word. They are what we need most when we go to meet the enemy. God and his word are more than enough. Like Brother Sim was saying, his grace is sufficient. God and his word are more than enough to meet the need of the hour. We see David only used one stone. He had plenty left over. To me, him taking the 5 stones showed that he was responsible. Why only take one when there was more to be had? Remember the 10 virgins, 5 foolish? They didn't take any extra oil along and they missed what they had went for. 5 wise went prepared, they had extra oil with, and they were able to meet the bridegroom. God can use people who are prepared to go longer and farther than what they may have originally planned. Perhaps we are tempted to stop before the task is completed. Remember the count back, I forget what book it's in, but anyhow, when Elisha told Joash to smite the ground with arrows, and he smote 3 times, and Elisha was upset with him because he said he should have smote 5 or 6 times. This was to signify the conflict with Syria, and since he had only smote the ground these few times instead of 5 or 6, they would only have partial victory. So it doesn't matter if we are an A, H, or an M. God wants people who are prepared to keep going until the victory is realized. Verse 47, I think it's noteworthy, and maybe in other translations, maybe it doesn't even say this, but here it says, "For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." Why didn't he say he will give you into my hand? I think God uses people who are satisfied when the credit goes to God and his people and not solely to me, even though it may appear that I did it single-handedly, as it looked like David did here. Well, it is time to close a little past time. When I started working on this message, I thought that we would look at more examples. Maybe I thought about the God using small things, thought about the little boy's lunch that fed the thousands, but we won't do that. But back here to David, here in verse 48 and 49 yet, I picture David, though he was a youth, he was moving ahead with confidence. He was prepared. He had the sling. He had the stones. He wasn't delaying. He hasted toward the task. He had the fortitude to do what he set out to do. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence his stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in the forehead. He didn't turn tail at the last minute. He didn't become confused and fumble with the stones, grabbing two instead of one. He didn't miss the mark. I believe because of his prior experience with the Lord, he was able to show the Philistines as well as the Israelites that the Lord can save his people when there is someone to sling the slings. Will you and I be willing to do that? May the Lord bless.